Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mark and Nacido podcast. My name is Mark and Nacido, and it's been a while. Today's podcast is going to be something I've been was recently inspired to do, and I'm going to do it. Basically, I'm going to talk about my experience growing up with hip hop music. Now, when we hate hip hop, we hate rap, and of course you can't spell the word crap without the word rap in it. I mean, rap is an art form. It can be. And I mean, depending on the lyrics and depending on the beats and stuff, it could be an art form. A lot of it could be junk, you know, garbage or whatever. But growing up listening to the music, I truly think it's an art form. Some sorts. Alright, so let's get started. Being a child of the 80s and, well, 90s, my first exposure to rap music, hip-hop music, whatever you want to call it, was in the 80s, I want to say, 1988, and I was 11 years old. I would listen, you know, whatever's on the radio, you know, Run DMC, you know, LL Cool J, Beastie Boys at the time, you know. I was listening to that back then. I wasn't really what's called a regular listener. I would just listen to the radio, and if I like it, it was on. I enjoyed it, you know. I would, you know, pretty much dig deep into, like who was the artist, you know, and, you know, I want to know more about these guys, you know, and I would, you know, whatever, you know, get, like, blank tapes as a kid and record songs on the radio if I wanted to, make a mixtape, whatever. That's pretty much what I did. I think it was, like, around 1992 when I had my real exposure to rap music, you know. I was around it in the 80s, you know, but it didn't really hit me until in the early 90s. So, and one rapper that really hit me then, believe it or not, MC Hammer, you know, hey, come on, man, you know, you can't touch this, you know, great song, Too Legit to Quit, come on, man, and then another good one in the time, you know, that I wanted to dig deep into more, you know. And at that point, too, in 1992, I started writing my own rap lyrics just for the heck of it. And they weren't that great at the time, whatever. I just wrote, you know, whatever I thought made sense. So, I kind of gave it up after about that 1 year. I mean, wrote like 3 or 4 songs, that was it, and kind of gave it up. But I think it was 2 years later when my exposure grew. Basically, you know, growing up, my mother was highly protective of me, and God bless her for that. I loved her for that, you know, but I also was curious. You know, who wasn't curious as a kid? Come on, you know. I was 16, 17 years old. The first song that really struck me, that really hit me, aside from MC Hammer, aside from Run DMC, was Cypress Hill's A to the K, which we know what A to the K means, a gun, but besides the point, it had a good beat to it. There was something about that beat, and I think that's what struck me about the song more, was the beat, and I wanted to hear more, you know. So I got into artists like, of course, Snoop Dogg, Dr. Dre, Tupac, you know, whatever, at the time, you know. It's what struck me then. And it was in 1984, when I was 17 years old, I started writing more lyrics again, kind of went back to it again. And, you know, I was in a gang, I was involved in gangs, and I had no desire being in a gang. But I never, and my rap lyrics were fairly positive. I mean, I did maybe say a few choice words. You know, who didn't? But like I said, positive. I didn't talk about killing anybody. I didn't talk about raping anybody, anything like that. It wasn't my intentions to do that, because it's not me. I mean, yeah, maybe some stuff that were a bit controversial, just to add a little flavor to it in some sorts. Like I wrote a song, I remember in 1995, called "Chilling in the White House." That was when President Clinton was in the White House, and no offense, I'm not a big Clinton fan. But I still wrote it in that time period, and it wasn't bad. It was just, a little, eh. I said a few choice words. It was one of my best ones, pretty much, according to what my friends were saying. But besides the point. But yeah, this is more about listening than writing. But then again, writing is an extra added bonus and stuff, so I'm adding that to the mix. It's like I said, when 1994 hit, I was into, of course, Snoop Dogg, Dr. Dre, Warren G, Tupac, Notorious B.I.G. I was listening to the stuff like that, and I wanted to, go back, like to the 80s again. Like, okay, let me hear some more old school artists. I never heard of Eric B. and Rakim until 1994. Had a friend that had the soundtrack of the movie Juice. Good movie, if you like that type of stuff. Tupac was in it. It came out in 92. There was one song on there called "Know the Ledge" by Eric B. and Rakim. Awesome song. I like the little scratch it had in there. I like the lyrics to it. It was great. So, and that's one of the songs that really inspired me later on. And I was just listening to stuff on the radio that was popular at the time. You had groups like Bone Thugs and Harmony doing First of the Month and Thuggish Ruggish Bone and all that back from the day. And you had Dr. Dre with the album The Chronic that came out. That was a great album, one of the best rap albums I heard. One of my favorite songs is "Let Me Ride." And I think when I got into whatever was popular then. Like later on in the 90s, I got involved with like the No Limit stuff, like Master P, Silk the Shocker, Fiend, Mac. All those guys. Even Snoop. No, this is maybe going on a limb here. People say Snoop Dogg's best album is his first one, Doggy Style. I may differ on that one. I think it's a good album, but I think the one he did with No Limit called "The Game Is to Be Sold, Not Told" is his best album. That's my opinion. To each your own, right? To each your own. And it was this point too when because I remember going back in 1996, I got involved in that one, in that group, the Fugees, Wyclef Jean, Lauryn Hill, and Proj, two guys and a girl. And their second album called The Score was one of the greatest, I think, rap albums that came out. It was a great album. But in 1987, Wyclef Jean releases his first solo effort called The Carnival. And, well, Wyclef Jean's from Haiti originally, so. And the thing about the album that really hit me was his Haiti influence. It was on it. He crossed over to his Haiti roots and, started singing his own language, and it was pretty neat. It was, to me, the greatest rap, and still to this day, the greatest rap album I heard. Wyclef Jean, The Carnival. Great album. Great album. We're going to go backwards again here a little bit to 95. When I was 18 years old, I was still writing rap, lyrics. I had a chance to do a demo tape, because I was, talking with some friends, and I had a even had a school teacher at the time looking at rap songs. And I was like, "Man, this guy's pretty good. He should record." I'm like, "Man, I got a studio in my house. You want to come over and record a demo?" And I wasn't really scared per se. I was like, I was all for it, but I kind of thought, well, I'm the kind of person that wants to produce my own stuff. And I didn't really tell him that per se. I just kind of said, "I think about it," and I kind of said, "You know what? I chickened out. I didn't do it." It wasn't the case at all. I just was stubborn and said, you know what? I'll produce my own work. Thank you very much. But you know what? You got to start somewhere, right? You got to start somewhere to get to where you need to be. And my ambitions wasn't to be a rapper. I mean, if it happened, awesome. If it didn't happen, awesome. You know, it would have been a cool experience. But, you know, I don't know. But anyway, that was my kind of claim to fame, some sorts. You know, I grew up, you know, I think around 1998, when I was 21, I wanted to get involved in more deeper, like more in the 80s again, and kind of more where rap started, you know, like, what was the first rap song and all that stuff. Well, recently I've been, you know, it's been on for a couple years already. I think the third, it's like 3 seasons to it, and each season has like 3 parts to it. It's called Hip Hop Evolution. It's on Netflix. It's an awesome documentary. I mean, I haven't watched the whole thing yet. I purposely watched the first episode of the first season, called The Foundation, which kind of starts like from the beginning, like when it first, how it first occurred. You know, the story of it really is interesting. It's basically what it was. It was this apartment complex in New York City. August 11th, 1973, was the first hip-hop party, as we know it, took place. And a DJ named DJ Kool Herc was the one that started it. He had a good record collection. He only had, like, 2 records, on this, you know, 2 of the same records in his collection. And he wouldn't, like, throw this party and play song after song after song, whatever, like, you know, any requests, who wants to hear this song, who wants to hear that song. He would take, like, 2 of the same record, play the same song at the same time, and it wouldn't be, like the entire song. It would be a certain part of the song, like, they call a break, which is how breakdancing kind of started, per se. Like, you know, dancers would dance to this, they call it a break beat, you know, a drum beat, the bass line, you know, they would dance to it, and that's what he would do. DJ Kool Herc, he would play these 2 records at the same time in the same part of the song, the break, and he would extend it by playing 1 record at a time, going back, playing the other record, you know, keep it going, you know what I mean, keep the flow going. He did a good job at it, and what I heard. And, of course, they had a MC there, too, you know, not really rapping, per se, but kind of, like, giving out shout-outs, like, hey, what's up, Mike, or what's up, Dan, or, you know, whatever. Or, like, hey, Mike, your car is parked in the wrong lot, spot, or something like that, you know, move it, you know, kind of like a shout-out kind of thing, or, you know, and he would do some kind of rhyming. His name was, he was the MC, his name was Coke LaRock. He was there at the parties too, doing his thing with emceeing. And I just found it very intriguing, because in a documentary on Netflix, he even said that this is like 1973, an almost talking record, which actually was wrong, because I'm going to tell you one song that I really admire that involves, well, 2 songs that I really admire that involves talking, that really inspired, I'm sure inspires rap. One in particular because of the beat. So one is by Isaac Hayes, R&B singer, known for the song Shaft and all that. He did a song in 1970. It was like an 11-minute long song. Like the first 5 minutes is him talking, just talking about whatever, you know. So people often say talking is like rapping. You know, they even, you know, some people use the word talk instead of talk. They use the word rap. Well, I'm going to rap to you for a little bit, you know, whatever. And even just talking the first 5 minutes. It's a great song. It's called I Stand Accused. Great song. Great song. He just talks about, like, I think an old lover he's seen met. Like, who got married. It's like, oh, you got married, I see. Okay. Congratulations, you know. Good song. Good song. You know. Another song that really, I can't remember now because I haven't heard it in a while. But there's, like, various takes of it. And one of the versions has him talking in it. But it's by James Brown. And it's actually my favorite James Brown song. I don't know if you've ever heard it before or not. But it's something worth checking out. It has a very good rap influence. The beat, The bass line is amazing. It's from 1972 and it's called Talking Loud and Saying Nothing. And it's basically the bass guitarist in the song was Bootsy Collins, who went on his own in the late 70s and became a popular in a band he started called Bootsy's Rubber Band, a band that kind of formed by George Clinton. George Clinton was a huge, was actually another, was a funk musician. So we're basically, let's start from the beginning here. There was a group formed in 1958 called the Parliaments, and the leader was George Clinton. It was a doo-wop group, you know, doing their thing, and they kind of recorded a couple records and stuff, and kind of like, I think they kind of like, I don't think they quit per se, they just didn't really go anywhere, so they kind of, well, broke off a little bit, and George Clinton kind of became a barber. He said when the Beatles kind of came around, that's when he quit being a barber, to grow his hair out and stuff. But I think it was in the later 60s he formed the Parliaments again. This became known as Parliament. And what's funny is that there was another group called Funkadelic, which is actually not another group. It was the same group as the Parliaments. So basically, it was Parliament Funkadelic, the same group, and they would release albums under both names. Like their first album was released under the name Parliament, and I think their second album was released under the name Funkadelic. So it's the same group using two names. Makes sense? Good band, good funk band, popular, very popular. Like Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg, use a lot of their later 70s stuff in their rap songs, like the samples, you know. Like Mothership Connection, Star Child, Tear the Roof Off, you know, Flashlight, Bop Gun, you know. But even the early stuff, like from the late 60s, early 70s, it was really great. There was this one song, one of their albums is called Maggot Brain. but the actual song title is actually an instrumental. And it's they had a guitarist named Eddie Hazel, who was really good at guitar. Often compared him with Jimi Hendrix. But you can kind of tell a difference if you really listen. But anyway, they were another group that really, you know, a lot of rappers use their songs and their beats and stuff. Parliament Funkadelic. And George Clinton formed another band. He formed another group called Parlay. And he formed Bootsy Collins' band. Bootsy's Rubber Band. And that was Bootsy Collins later on in the 70s. He has that voice like, oh, hello, baby. You know, something like that. You know, I can't describe it to you. I'm not going to do it because I can't. I'm not Bootsy Collins and I can't sing, so. But he had kind of like a unique voice. You can pretty much, it was distinct, let's say. But yeah, he was a bass guitarist, and James Brown's Talking Loud and Saying Nothing. The beat is just amazing in that song. I mean, this drum beat's almost, this is totally rap, you know. The bass line, totally rap, you know. I mean, and there was records back in the 60s, too, that was released that people can often say it was the first rap song. There was a record in 1965 by a guy named Blowfly. He was from the South, and he called it Southern Talk. But he did a song called Rap Dirty, and it was pretty much him rapping, you know, on a record. He was a truck driver, and he was just talking about, you know, controversial stuff that was happening in the 60s, and you know, in the Civil Rights Movement and all that stuff, talking about the Grand Dragon, the Ku Klux Klan, and all that stuff. So controversial, but I mean, I guess that was happening at the time, so he recorded it, and that was him. In 1968, a guy named Pig Meat Markham came out with a record called Here Comes the Judge, which is totally rap, all the way. I mean, the whole beat is rap, the lyrical style is rap, just everything, you know. But people can honestly say it wasn't the first rap song, per se. Back in like the 70s, and you know, when disco was popular, you know, in clubs, there was DJs that would, you know, do their thing in a club, like wave your hands in the air, wave them like you just don't care. Seriously, that was what the DJs were doing in clubs. They were getting on the mic and like kind of like rapping to the beat, you know. And there's a certain DJ named DJ Hollywood that was referenced in Hip Hop Evolution. Curtis Blow, another one of rap's early moguls, mentioned him. And he was just a DJ playing disco music, and he would get on the mic and start rapping or start talking, you know, in the clubs. And and going back to, there was a DJ on the radio named Frankie Crocker who did the same thing. He would rap on air, like right now you're listening to the sounds of whoever, and he would kind of like flow it. He would like do like a little flow, like describe it, but what was on the radio, like right now you're listening to a song by the man of the hour, you know, whatever, all that stuff. And that was just, to me, pure genius. I mean, the guy's just on the mic, you know, rapping about like who's on the radio playing, you know, right now, you know. And he's the one that kind of started it. And I think, and Frankie Crocker hated, right, he hated rap because they pretty much stole his style, is what he thought. And, you know, I would say yeah, they did probably, but you know, it is what it is. Same with DJ Hollywood. He was, you know, doing his thing in the clubs. Here come these rappers coming out doing what he's doing, you know. I think that was the case when the first rap record, quote-unquote rap record, came out. And it's a great song, and I actually have the record of it. I have the 12-inch vinyl of it. It's called Rapper's Delight by Sugar Hill Gang in 1979. And the producer of the record was Sylvia. If you remember that song in the 50s, Love is Strange, Begin Sylvia? Well, that's Sylvia. She actually, I think, got the influence because she went into disco clubs and she was hearing what people were saying. And I think what she was trying to do, I think she knew about this style coming out. She probably knew about those parties that, you know, Kool Herc was throwing, possibly. And says, you know what, we need to make a record of this stuff. We need to put it out. And when we, you know, I think they're just trying hard to be the first act to put a record out of this new genre. And that's what happened, I think, you know. And, you know, people hated it. And I can see why they hated that record. Because, you know, like I said, it was just them trying to, I think, trying to rush a record out. Just to, because they were copying what disco DJs were doing, what people on the radio were doing, talking. I think that's the reason why it was so, like, they thought, oh, that's why this song sucks, for because of this reason and that reason. But yeah, that's, I think that's what happened. It's a good song. I love the song myself, and you know, I'm not complaining about it. You know, I think it was one of, you know, DJ Kool Herc even admits that he likes the song, you know. It's a great song, I liked it, you know, nothing wrong with it. You know, it is what it is. If you want to go back prior, in 1979, before Rivers of Light was released, there was a record called Personality Jock, Kingpin III, by a funk group called Fatback. And, well, he was kind of rapping too. You know, he was kind of doing his rap on the mic. It was kind of interesting. So look it up. It's called Personality Jock, Kingpin III by Fatback. The Fatback Man. It's a funk group from the 70s. But, you know, it's kind of like, I feel like they kind of stole different styles too. But, I mean, who knows? They could have probably started it and that's what influenced DJs and stuff. I don't know. But I can't tell you right now on that one. But yeah, it's a good song. Again, Fatback, Kingpin III from 1979. Good song. My favorite rap song of all time is a song by Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five. And I think if you know who I'm talking about, you know what song I'm referring to. From 1982, called The Message. Great song from start to finish. The lyrics, the beat, everything. I mean, it's, to me, it's about reality, or reality in their terms, you know, like, terms of, like, growing up in that type of situation. And, I think, too, you know, Grandmaster Flash himself, you know, because there was a group that called Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five. You had Grandmaster Flash, who was actually a DJ, and his other five guys that were rappers, MCs. And, but I think it was Million Mel that was the one that was rapping the song. But, I was intrigued later, you know, after I started rapping myself, or I started writing raps, whatever. I was intrigued by, you know, the sampling and DJing and stuff. I even went to a party once in 2007, 2008, I can't remember what year it was. A guy was DJing, and I kind of got there and I started doing it myself. It was kind of fun. It was good memory, but I was very intrigued by the DJing and the sampling and all that stuff, how that works out. So I tried it myself, and I liked it. I like the story how Grandmaster Flash, you know, does his DJing. It's like he takes a crayon and marks a spot, and he lets the needle pass the crayon maybe like four times, and that's when, okay, the next record's going to be started up in the same beat, but in the same record, but I'm going to start it up again and extend it. Then he goes back to the other record, goes back, okay, plays it, goes to the other record, plays it, goes to the other record, you know, it's kind of an interesting story. I think I'm rushing this a bit, but because I'm tired. But I also want to get another podcast out because it's been a while, and I'm also working on my series too. I'm working on 1965 next. But anyway, rap music is just I don't know, to me. It is an art form. It's not like it used to be anymore. I mean, it's probably more cleaner now in some ways. I mean, back in the 70s and 80s, rap wasn't that bad until gangster rap came out. It was pretty bad. You know, like N.W.A. when they came out. And, of course, Dre and Ice Cube were in it. You know, Eazy-E. And, but one of their songs is called, you know, I'm not going to say the word. You know, I could say it, but I'm not going to say it. I think you know what I mean when I say the letter. F the Police. And now, the stuff about that song was that it was about Dr. Dre. He was getting speeding ticket after speeding ticket after speeding ticket and was like, you know what, I'm fed up with this. I'm gonna do a song called F the Police. Simple as that. You know, not good. But not, I'm not gonna say it's bad either. I mean, it's not one of my favorites. I wasn't a fan of NWA, even though I liked Dr. Dre's solo, and I liked Ice Cube solo. I just wasn't a fan of the group. I think my favorite song by them is called Express Yourself. And that was all Dre on that one. But yeah, I mean, that's pretty much, I mean, I feel like it wasn't much, but I feel like that's my exposure to rap music. You know, I started listening to it in the 80s, and I think it was in the 90s when it struck me, and I became more of a fan, you know, and I kind of wrote my own lyrics, and I even mixed records too, so it was kind of, you know, I was on both ends of the deal, so, but yeah, it was, I mean, like I said, rap music is not the same as it used to be. It used to be really good. I'll go back again, there's just, I have something I totally agree with, even though it's not my personal favorite, but it is a great album. Rolling Stone did a thing. I think they did it twice, in fact. They did it twice, and it was a... They rated, like... They did, like, a rating of, like, the top 500 albums of all time. Now, how do you rate 500 albums alone? You can't do that. It's totally impossible. I can't even name 500 albums on my own. But when I saw the list I saw, the highest ranking rap album was by Public Enemy. It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back, and that's a great album. But it's not my personal favorite, but it's actually a good one, and I can see why it was the highest ranking rap album. But yeah, that's it. That's all I have for this episode, unfortunately. Thank you, and I'll catch you next time. Bye. God bless.